did Mr. Tucker tell you about James B. Davis? Because everything I've heard about Mr. James B. Davis, the founder of the Dixie Hummingbirds, he ruled with iron fist. And that means he did not play around.
And, that he did.
Yeah, what did Mr. Tucker say about James B. Davis? Or when Tucker was the head, did he carry on some of those same traditions? But like, what stories there that Ira Tucker tell you about James B. Davis, the founder, and some of his strict rules he had for the group?
Oh, man. Mr. Davis, everything that you just stated, that's fact. That is fact. He ruled the group with an iron fist. I never saw a gentleman continue to carry the respect of his members even after he retired. Man, and I'm talking about he passed away in 2007, I believe it was. And even shows that we did and concerts that we did, and we sold merchandise, Mr. Tucker would use that money to bring back to take care of him and Mr. Howard Carroll with.
Mm.
You know, that's just how much respect that they carried for Mr. Davis. But he was the founder, he was the orchestrator, he was the originator of the group. He did rule with an iron fist. He had rules. He had a book of fines. One of my Hummingbird brothers currently, Brother Tory Nettles, he still had, we recopied all those fines, and he holds the rule book right now to this day. Oh, man, from no smoking, no drinking, no wives to ride in the car, no women to ride in the car unless it's your wife, you know. We were fined, you know, Hummingbirds were always known for dressing. Man, we were fined for wrong socks, wrong tie, wrong handkerchief. Man, I tried to get away. We had a banded collar shirt. And I'll never forget, we were in Camden, New Jersey. We had a banded collar shirt as a part of our uniform. And I left mine at the hotel. And so I had a collar shirt that I tried to tuck in the collar and make it look like a banded collar shirt. And even though Mr. Tuck was blind in one eye, he could still see out that good eye. I see you, dude. I see you. And, man, that cost me $40 that night. I never will forget it. $40 for having the wrong shirt. So, you know, the rules that Mr. Davis set basically mirrored the fact that he wanted this group to live what they sung about. You know,
mm-hmm.
He wanted us to carry that image. You know, it's one thing to sound good on stage, but it's another thing to be good in character, you know, in your life. And so that was how he set his group up. And when Mr. Tucker took the reins in 84, after Mr. Davis retired, he kept the same foundation to really. The group really didn't need a manager, but he was the manager. But it kept going, and it kept running like a well-oiled machine up until this day.
Yes, sir. Yeah, he wasn't nothing to play with. I think I might have heard an interview with James B. Davis or saw it written somewhere. And he wasn't exempt from the rule itself. I think I heard where he went to a jukebox and accidentally played a Muddy Waters tune and found himself.
He sure did. Yes, sir. He was the kind of guy that, man, you know, he would not ask his guys to do anything he wasn't willing to do himself. So if he set the rule, you can best believe that he was going to follow that same route, you know. And that's how you keep respect of your men like that, you know. So, I thank God for him. He and one of our guitar players, God rest him, Lyndon Jones, he and I actually were the last two members of the group to be voted on by him.
Mm.
Mr. Tucker took Brother Jones and I to Mr. Davis's house, and man, you talking about a scary trip, man. Because of all the things that you just mentioned and all the things that we had heard about Mr. Davis, you know, as we would travel up and down the highway, we walked into his house and he was a firm, soft-spoken man, you know, and he talked real light, but he was really firm in what he said. And so Mr. Tucker brought us in and we sat down and Lyndon, he played the guitar a little bit and we sang, of course, and then he would reminisce with Mr. Tucker back and forth, talking about what happened in the days of yesteryear. Then we sang a little more. And so as we were leaving, and this is how I knew that they had intentions of the group carrying on long after they had, you know, been called from labor to reward. He looked at Mr. Tucker and said, well, Brother Tucker, you know, I think you got you some good men. I think they'll work well for us. And I was like, wow, they really had intentions of the group going on even after they had went on, you know. So that was an experience that I'll never forget. I always cherish that.
Yes, sir. We are talking to Pastor Carlton Lewis, lead singer of the Dixie Hummingbirds. Now, I want to segue into, like I told you before, I spoke to Ms. Evelyn Turrentine AG and posed this too, and I talked to Mr. Tito on the Bolognese too. Mm-hmm. I want to throw this to you, swing this by you. You know, there you have the industry versus ministry, you know, and I'm going to go back to Mr. Tucker again. I'm sure I read somewhere where Mr. Tucker said when people buy a ticket, you know, to a gospel concert, they, you know, they want to see a show. But did Mr. Tucker, did he emphasize to you younger guys about, I know he's sure, you know, y'all was sounding real tight harmony, tight music and all. But did he emphasize like any kind of entertainment aspect, or was he just, you know, strictly ministry? The ministry to the people.
Well, one of the things that he stressed to us, and you know, you got to realize too that this is from a gentleman that was coming from the golden age of gospel, you know, and the Hummingbirds being that group that inspired people like Jackie Wilson and the Temptations and people of the like, you know, Wilson Pickett, Stevie Wonder, of course, you know. God gave us a gift, you know, and it is through practice that we hone our craft, you know. And you never want to cheat your audience at all, you know. If they, you know, they paid money to come see you, they expect for you to do what you do, and you need to do it to the best of your ability. Now, you're giving it your best. It's not just for the money, but you're giving it your best because God is the one that gave you the gift. Mm-hmm. And so with that being said, as far as the performances were concerned, he never wanted us to cheat our audience. He always wanted us to give 150%. He always preached to us that when people tell you that, oh, man, you did good, y'all tore it up tonight, you know, that kind of thing. He said, man, you let that pass through you. Just let it pass through you. Let it be like water down a duck's back, and you get back in that basement and you work that much harder. And that way, when you get up in front of people, not only are you giving them your best, but you're giving God your best. So that, in and of itself, was an aspect of ministry. The other thing was, when it came down to recording the records and things of that nature, God gave them the ministry part of it. When he gave them the lyrics, pen to paper, they wrote it out. They ironed out the harmonies. They rehearsed it down. They went to the studio. They recorded it. That's why those songs, and not just Hummingbird songs, but I think gospel at that time, period, that's why it has so much power, because it came from on high. They just happened to put it on wax, and it was the Don Robies from like Peacock. It was Don Roby in it, and it was the guys from Nashboro Records and WLAC and those folks that took care of the business of selling it in record form, you know. So there's that industry part, but the ministry is what we're hearing in the record. So I think a lot of that gets lost on us in today's generation. I think a lot of us, we're more ministry minded until we don't have the balance that it takes to make a living at gospel. We don't have that balance. The ministry is when you're in front of the people and you're pouring out what God gave you. But the business aspect of it, that takes place after you said, God bless you, thank you, good night. That's where the industry portion of it comes in. And I think we're too top heavy on one end of the spectrum or the other.
Yes, sir. And then we have Pastor Carlton Lewis of the Dixie Hummingbirds. And I'm going to get Pastor Apostle Bolden's this group, they give God the honor and the glory, the credit for the gift that they have. Now, you believe it or not, no, people say that, and there's God here. He'll say, well, y'all groups talking about it, Jesus help me. No, that wasn't Jesus. That was you up there. Jesus was not there singing with you. I'm like, look, again, I respect this guy. But stuff like that, man, I mean, you're taking it too far. Mm-hmm. So what's I forgot why he said it that way, but you know, people know they can sing, know they can play an instrument well. They give an honor, that's a God given gift there. Mm-hmm. And you got people saying, Well God was not there on that stage singing, that was you. That one God. So what would you say to somebody like that with that kind of mentality?
I would say that they are sitting in the seat of the scornful.
Mm.
You know, a lot of times...
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You know, you have people that they're standing on the sidelines kind of just watching, but for the wrong reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have some people that are praying with the people that are up, you know, that God is using. And unfortunately, sometimes people don't have any idea what it's like to be up in front of people and to allow God to use you and, you know, and things like that. And I think it's important that when whatever we're doing for God, that we give him glory. Because I'm telling you from my own experience, when I first started preaching in 94 or 95, I got up to preach. And one time, a few times after I was done preaching, the people would come up and shake my hand and they would thank me for the message. And I would say, you're welcome. And then one of the last times I got up to preach, I was in station in San Diego at the time. I got up there by myself. You know, you may have heard me tell the story. I was up there mispronouncing words and just having to actually think about what I was going to say next. And the whole time I'm knowing that something is off and something is going on. And then the Lord spoke to me and he said, when you were telling the people you're welcome, you were taking credit for what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you're up here by yourself and you know what it's like to be up here by yourself. And so, you know, whether you're singing or you're preaching, when you get up before God's people, you have to know it's God. You know, absolutely. I found out the hard way. It does not flow very well, you know, when God doesn't get the glory and he's not with you. And so, you know, people could sit back and they could think, oh, you're a good speaker or you're a good singer. But who gives us our voice to sing and who gives us the words to say when we are preaching except the Lord? And so sometimes people sit back and they just think it's natural man up there that's doing all of that when it's actually the Lord. And so my thought is sometimes people just sit back and they criticize, not knowing what all goes into it, just like what Pastor Lewis was saying. You know, even after you say good night and thanking everybody for coming, you still got stuff behind the scenes that you have to do. You know, you have to take care of the business side, and you know, so definitely, even with that, there needs to be prayer. You know, so
yes, most definitely. You got to pray for the ones that do good business, and you sure enough got to pray for the ones that don't do good business. I've seen both ends of it, you know. And it's, you know, sometimes they make it hard to remain Christian when it comes down to handling the business or the industry part of it. But that's where you really have to stay prayed up. And that's one thing that I can say about our group. Our group always, we've always been a praying group. You know, and it was something about, you know, the prayers of Mr. Tucker, before we would even go on the stage or in rehearsal, you know, he was always prayer conscious, and he always wanted to make sure that his boys, that's what he called us, his boys was covered with prayer. And for those that really didn't have a church background like I did, you know, it consequently brought them into knowing who Christ was in a more deeper and intimate way because of his prayers. You know, Pop was a many things to all of us. And one of those things was a mentor, you know. And so, you know, for guys like our bass singer, Carnell McKnight, you know, who really didn't have that great of a relationship with his father, you know, through Pop's prayers, you know, he brought him in to a close relationship with God. And so, you know, I have a lot to be thankful for just by knowing Mr. Tucker in that regard.
I have a question there, Pastor Lewis.
Go ahead.
How much of what you learned in the group did you carry on with you in your ministry as a pastor? And what I mean is, you know, how sometimes, they were very strict in the rules and being followed, and there were fines that were given. And, you know, while sometimes people on the surface might not understand the strictness of that, I was wondering how much, you know, and you became a pastor, at what point and how much did you know that God was, even as a singer, God was preparing you for your ministry down the road as a pastor? And, you know, in other words, what lessons did you learn as a member and being young in that group that you took into being a pastor?
Pop Tucker, and I put this in, this is in the book, and I'm about to shamelessly plug the book from Gary Zoltan, Great God Almighty, Dixie Hummingbird's Rise of Soul Gospel Music, second edition. Y'all pick it up on Amazon. There you go, Mr. Zoltan. I'm just playing. But I put it in the book that Pop had a way of dealing with all of us. It was four of us core guys, myself, Brother Toy Nettles, Lyndon Baines Jones, and Carnell McKnight, and now we have the twins, and we're teaching the twins, Roy and Troy Smith, we're teaching them that at this aspect of group life, Pop had a way of dealing with all of us on our own level, just as God deals with every man according to his measure of faith. He dealt with us on our own level. And with me, I already had a church background, and I thank God for my godfather, Reverend Dr. Charles L. Emory, Pilgrim Baptist Church, where I'm serving as his assistant, Gary, Indiana. I had developed under him, and I had a good voice, and I could sing, and I was tearing Indianapolis up, and, you know, I came basically off of the sand lot into the major leagues, jumping from a local group to the Hummingbirds. So I came with a little ego, you know. And so when it came down to me, Pop had a way of deflating my ego. He tore it down, made me feel like I didn't know nothing about singing. And through the fines, the rules,
the regiment. And I'm talking, you know, most local groups, you rehearse 3 or 4 hours in a basement on a Saturday. That's it for the week. We rehearsed 3 times a week, and most of our rehearsals lasted 12 to 13 hours. Mm-hmm. We would go in at 6 in the evening, come out 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning. And if, and our reward for leaving early was that we got, if we got it right, we could leave early. We got it right, and we could do it 3 times with no mistakes. We could leave early. That was that was the regiment. And if you were late to rehearsal, 6:03, you're late. 6:05, that's a $10 fine, and it increases $10 every minute subsequent till you show up. Those were. It made professionals out of us. That whole adage about us, you know, somebody tells you you do good, you know, let it be like water going down your duck, like water down a duck's back. That kept us from getting the big head. And preparation is what was key. And I take that even into my sermon prep. You know, the more time you spend in the Word of God, the better you're going to become when you go to the pulpit. You're prayed up and you're prepared. And ultimately, it's God that got the, he's got to kiss the moment. When God kisses the moment, it's not, you're not flying by the seat of your pants. You're prepared, you know. So all that preparation and that discipline that was instilled in me with the Hummingbirds, I carry that into my into the way I operate even today.
Yes, sir. This is Pastor Carlton Lewis of the Dixie Hummingbirds joining us on the phone. I hope y'all, however you're listening, and there's some real singers out there who really live up to what they're singing. I believe we got one of them on the line right here. And,
oh man, bless you.
And you said something about your. I'll get to that later. Okay, I'm gonna. If you don't mind, I want to touch on you know like some of these big time groups. They have, I don't know how many different set of soulsters out there. They got a couple of gospel keynotes out there. Multiple fantastic volunteers, just to name a few. And I'll tell you something, Pastor Lewis. I used to think to myself, I see all these different groups, I always said to myself, I said, that ain't going to happen to a Dixie Hummingbirds. There ain't going to be no two sets of Dixie Hummingbirds out there. And then some, I logged on into Facebook, and what did I see? The new Dixie Hummingbirds. I'm like, man, I thought that did something to me. I said that's something ain't right here. So I don't know. I know you probably can't, you know, speak about the soulsters and volunteers or whatever, but you know, after seeing that, there's another set of Dixie Hummingbirds. I mean, what, in your opinion, or what would cause that? You know, some. A group of men take the name and just, you know, travel down the road under that name.
You know, Mr. Robinson, I can't speak for the soulsters or the keynotes or,
yes, sir,
or the volunteers. You know, I wish all of them well, you know, in their, you know, in their endeavors to keep the legacy alive, but this, I'm just going to be honest, I mean, this program is called Raw Spiel, right?
Yes,
so
sir.
I'm going to just tell you raw how we feel as the group that has kept this name out there for the last almost 20 years. It is a horrific slap in the face to know that the gentleman that is behind this was nothing more than a bass player for us that happened to get in some nice pictures during his run with Pop Tucker. I saw him come in and I saw him go out. You know, he was never voted in as a member of the group. He was just a bass player. And For whatever reason, he felt just because he got hooked up with the Davis family that gave him some type of leverage to the name, and he doesn't own any of that. And you know, when you don't know the music business and you're not privy to trademark and copyrights and those nuanced things that we're not used to dealing with when we do our kind of business, so to speak, that will come back to haunt you and it'll come back to bite you. And so all I know is, you know, he was just a musician. We were the ones that got trained. We were trusted with this legacy when all three of the last originals died. We buried Mr. Paul Owens. We buried Mr. Davis. We buried Mr. Tucker. We buried Mr. Howard Carroll. He was the last of the original. And those gentlemen closed their eyes, trusting that we would do our part to carry on the work that they had laid out for us. So this second set, you know, I've heard them, and the sound is not there. Their lead singer, he's a terrific singer. He's great. I have nothing but the utmost respect for him, but he doesn't sing Hummingbird style. When I got in the group, mm-hmm. I wasn't a Hummingbird style singer, but Ira Tucker trained me to become a Hummingbird style singer, you know. So that crafted sound is still with us. It's with Oscar. We could come together. If you put us in the room together right now, give us about 20 minutes, we'll come out with a Hummingbird show. That's because of the training that we received. We know how to rehearse. We know how to blend. We know what we're looking for. You know, we're not just trying to get up and run out there because we done talked up enough gigs, so to speak, and now we got to deliver, and so I got to run and put a group together. We're not going to sound like a male, you know, like your average church male chorus trying to sing Hummingbird tunes. We are the Hummingbirds, singing Hummingbird stuff, mm-hmm. you know. So, yeah, that's how we feel, and I don't have no issues with saying that.
You're African American, you know, like you said, you know, you and the late Linda Bain Jones and Tori Nettles, you know, y'all was under Ira Tucker. And you got the stamp of approval from the.
Yeah, man, cut the tape on and try to emulate what we heard. We were taught by the man that crafted that sound all those years. From he joined the group in 1938, and he passed in 2008. He was the sound of the Hummingbirds. You know, Mr. Mm-hmm. Walker. He put his in. Mr. Howard put his in. Mr. Beachy Thompson, he put his in. Mr. Bobo, you know, we were blessed to find Cornell McKnight. You know, Pop found him at Temple University, you know, and he brought back the Bobo sound. And we really had, that's something that we hadn't had since Mr. Bobo had passed, you know. So we got it. You know, we got it. We worked at it. And God blessed us with it. You know, we're blessed to carry this this torch and this mantle. You know, so, you know, we wasn't just no fly-by-night people, you know.
Yes, sir. And for y'all, not me, but Bobo, that was the bass singer for the Dixie Hummingbirds. And that night, that's a bad dude. He's like the Barry White of quartet. He could bottom out. You know, so I'm looking at some of y'all videos on YouTube, man. I tell you, I was glad. I was happy to really like what I was hearing. I say, man, y'all guys are really carrying on that tradition. And I could tell y'all really put in a lot of hard work into it to maintain that sound. And I, for one, you know, I really appreciate the effort y'all really put into it. So if anybody take a road trip with me, you guarantee you go hear some Dixie Hummingbirds. You go hear some Pick 'em Jubilee, Soul Spurs. Y'all don't like it, you better put some earbuds on with your phone and hear, listen, whatever. But you roll with me, we go hear some Hummingbirds. Some Jubilees, yeah.
Bless you, man. Bless you, man. Yeah, Pilgrim Jubilees, man. That is one of my favorite groups right there. Mr. Clay and Mr. Cleve, man. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Hey, you mentioned that you have a book coming out. Well, I think when Mr. Jared was chairman, that's like a extension of the first. I ain't even got the first Dixie Hummingbird book. What is new one coming out? Could you tell the people about it, what they can expect to read from it?
Great God Almighty, the book on the Dixie Hummingbirds. Jerry Zoltan is a wonderful friend of ours. I met him in 2003 as he was rapping. He had already wrapped up Great God Almighty, the first edition, and that covered the Dixie Hummingbirds from its inception up until the 75th anniversary. That was the 75th anniversary in 2003. And that's what the first edition covered. The second edition cover has an ending chapter. It has all that information. But the ending chapter has, from the 75th up until now, it covers that broad spectrum. It covers basically our career, how we came to be a part of such a rich legacy, and beyond. So it's a great read. When I first got in the group, because I'm one of those persons, if I'm going to get into something and commit to it, I want to know what I'm committing to. So I sat in the hotel room and I read that book from cover to cover in about 2 days, and I was just awestruck at, you know, all the things that they had done, from people that they had inspired, and a lot of white rock groups that I never would have imagined paid homage to Mr. Tucker and the Hummingbirds, period. You know, you wouldn't think that they would have performed in some of the venues that they did. When we think of quartet, all we think of is, you know, churches, school auditoriums, civic centers, places of the like. I've never really heard of another quartet group other than the Blind Boys now performing in bars, places like Whiskey a Go-Go in like New York City. You know, those are places that are strictly basically rock-oriented, but the rock realm had so much reverence for the Hummingbirds that they even bought them to those venues. And when we did our overseas tour, we weren't in schools and churches. We were in bars, and we sung in bars. And people, I never will forget, there was a guy that stood up on a speaker. We were at a blues festival, and this guy, Brother Tory, he'll attest to this. This guy stood up on the speaker. He couldn't even speak our language. We were doing Love Me Like a Rock. And after we finished Love Me Like a Rock, he stood up on that speaker and declared, "I love Jesus," right then and there. And it, man, it brought tears to my eyes. Being in France, there was a lady that said she had heard gospel music on records and things of that nature and never had met real live American gospel singers until she came to the Blues Fest. And George Clinton had worked that Friday night. We worked that Saturday night. And she said she was going to go home and kill herself, but she decided to come to hear the Hummingbirds, and we had stopped her from killing herself. So, you know, so when you talk about ministry, that, you know, to me, that's ministry. And all of that stuff is in that book. You know, those stories, so much I could talk about, but I would much rather you go get the book.
I hear you on that. I'm had to look it up tonight myself. I had if it was anything like the, I had the Pilgrim Jubilees book. They, I think what the author was Alan Young or something like that. That was a really good read. So I can just imagine what a good read the Dixie Hummingbirds would be with, you know, a group that's been around since the Great Depression. Up until the COVID, up until now. Almost 100 years of singing. So that's
almost.
So that'll be a good read for anybody to add to their collection. I didn't give out my email address. It's info@therawspiel.com. That's info@therawspiel.com. You feel free to email the broadcast. Any questions or concerns, you feel free to email us. Go ahead.
I have a question. What advice would you give to someone that was to a group of people, let's say, that wanted to start a music group? What advice would you give and wisdom would you share with someone or a group of people that wanted to start in this industry, knowing what you know now with all of your experiences?
Oh, man, that's a loaded question. The first thing I would tell them to do is pray, because if you're not prayed up, you've already lost the battle right there. But secondly, aside from that, I would make sure that I would tell them to learn the business of singing, learn the business of selling music. And, you know, you really got to know it, because today things have changed so much. When we got started, CDs were the going thing, you know. Now it went from CDs to MP3s. Now it's streaming, you know. Radio, as we knew it, is not radio anymore, you know. So you got to learn, if you're going to make a living at it, you got to learn your business. And then, aside from that, you got to hone your craft. You got to hone your craft. If you've been blessed with a gift or a talent, spend some time. Practice. You know, practice. They say practice make perfect. You got to hone your skill, hone your craft, because nobody's going to pay money to hear mediocre talent. It's not going to happen. So to me, that's just basic advice that I would tell anybody trying to start a group today.
Yes, sir. And I've got a question myself here. And have y'all, know your time with the birds, have y'all went to a program and the promoter was short on the money? Have y'all experienced something? Have y'all experienced something like that? Or? And if so, what, how did y'all, fix the problem?
I plead the fifth on that question. we have experienced the highs and the lows of those situations. I think one of the things that kept the Hummingbirds out there was the fact that it wasn't just about the money. It wasn't just about the money. There were times when, I mean, we got paid handsomely for 40 minutes worth of work. And, man, you had a good week, you had a good month and then there were times, man, when we were, house full of people. And the promoter standing at the back door, you didn't see him anymore the rest of the night. There were times when we would, when we got with a booking agent, that's when things really changed for our set of Hummingbirds. We got with the booking agent, and we never had that problem. We would pull up to the venue, and they're, "Hi, how are you guys? Would you like to check now, or do you want to wait until after you get finished performing?" And Mr. Tucker and his family, "Oh, we'll take it now. We'll take it now." and there was no issue. But on the flip side of that, you know, auditorium full of people, we get finished singing, and then the promoter, and Mr. Tucker, I need to talk to you for a second. You already know what's getting ready to happen. And we would be angry. We were young, and we were angry. And Mr. Tucker would look at us, and this was the voice of wisdom. Hey, man, we'll get them tomorrow night. We'll get it tomorrow night. The Lord signs our checks. The Lord's counting our money. We'll get it tomorrow night. Don't worry about it. We'll get it tomorrow night. And that in and of itself taught us not to worry about that. But it never stopped us from looking for ways to combat that and kind of get out of that. So like I said, you know, fortunes changed for us when we actually got with a booking agent.
Yeah, that's something. I tell you, I done heard some stories about these old timers. What they? I think Willie Banks was one of them. They be toting guns with them. I think him and
oh man,
Troy Raymond. They ain't playing around with their money now.
Straight razors I heard a group back in the 60s. Mr. Tucker would tell us some stories about how one night they, you know, they were avid hunters. They liked to hunt and they liked to fish. And so they kept shotguns in the car underneath their clothes, you know. So they got to a town early and they wanted to, you know, blow off some steam. They go hunting. You know, Mr. Tucker, he was a fisherman. He's an avid fisherman. So they would do those things. And so they got finished singing, and Mr. Beachy saw the promoter easing out the window. And so they didn't change clothes. They jumped in the vehicle, and they chased the guy down, and they convinced him without question to pull over, and they had to check up by the headlight. They took him by the headlights, and he paid them reluctantly, but he paid them, and they let him go on his merry way. You know, those kinds of stories, man. Mr. Tucker used to keep us up for hours, and we'd just be dying laughing at the collection practices of the quartet back in the day.
Yeah, that's something. You know what that reminds me. Yeah, that reminds me of. I saw a Facebook Live with was it Dorothy Norwood? Yeah, Dorothy Norwood. She was talking about getting paid after she sung or whatever. I guess it was early in her career. Now I guess the promoter had a whole bunch of money on the table, so she stuck her hand in her purse, pretending like she had a gun. Put all that money in her purse and knowing backed out. Unless you was pulling a gun at them. So I tell you that was on the live. I'm not making that up. But I tell you that there was something else back in the day, sir.
Yeah, and you know, people think you know, those, oh man, those are wild stories. You can't imagine what some of those artists had to go through just to make sure that they got, you know, paid for that night. You know, you hear about Aretha Franklin having her purse under the piano because she made sure she got her money, and it sat under the piano while she was working. And that purse left the stage when she left the stage.
I tell you, this is Pastor Carlton Lewis of the world famous Dixie Hummingbirds. Pastor Lewis, you, let's see, besides the book, you have any other projects working on? Or you and the Hummingbirds, y'all got anything come that you want to, you know, put out there on the air?
Well, we're trying to get under, you know, out from under the pandemic like everybody else, you know. And so we, you know, we've been talking amongst ourselves about,
what getting back together looks like. And, you know, of course, we lost our guitar player last year. That kind of took us for a loop, you know, because he was one of the rocks of the group when we came, you know, when we came along. He had joined in, Mr. Tucker recruited him in 2000. And he had been here all this time, you know, and, you know, it's kind of rough when you spend most of your life with a guy, you know, y'all work together night after night, you know, eat together, travel together and all that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden, you know, the Lord take you like that, you know, kind of, you know, you really don't know what going forward looks like. So we've been talking about that. So, you know, we know we got the book is out now, of course. And so we're just, you know, y'all keep us in prayer. Keep us in prayer. You ain't heard the last of us. I know that. You know, we still got a few. We trying to make 100. Cause 99 and a half ain't gonna do it.
Yes, sir, man. I'm real happy that y'all are maintaining that Dixie Hummingbird sound, that keeping that tradition going. That's 94 years, y'all. This is one of the guys that Mr. Ira Tucker himself had, you know, gave his stamp of approval of. Pastor Carlton Lewis of the legendary Dixie. At the time, Apostle, we want to get the people your website.
Yeah, it is www.onetruth.tv. www.onetruth.tv.
All right, and then. Yeah, but I tell you, Pastor Lewis, I really do appreciate you for, you know, taking the time out to, you know, come on the show and do this interview. I tell you, I don't know about anybody else, but I really, really enjoyed myself and all the information that you shared with us today.
Oh, Bro Robinson, I thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And to the other pastor, man, thank you so much for being on here. And I would just like, if you'd allow me the moment, I'd just like to just give a formal shout out to my Hummingbird brothers, Brother Tory Nettles, Brother Cornell McKnight, Roy Smith, Troy Smith. Certainly want to extend our condolences to the family of our co-executive producer, Ms. Medeva Davis, who passed away this last week. We certainly want to shout out the Tucker family, and I want to shout out my church family, the Pilgrim Missionary Baptist Church of Gary, Indiana, where our pastor and our leader and our teacher is none other than the Reverend Dr. Charles L. Emery. I just thank God for all of those components that have made my life what it is. I thank God for my family, my children, my wife, my mother. Man, there's so many people that have poured into me, you know, to make me what I am today. And I thank God for the opportunity to just be on the air and call their names, you know. Some of them you may know, some of them you might not. But ultimately, I do want to thank God for the legacy and the lives of Mr. James B. Davis, Ira Tucker, James Walker, Howard Carroll, Beachy Thompson, and William Bobo. Those gentlemen are the shoulders that we stand on currently today.
Yes, sir. That was Pastor Carlton Lewis of the Dixie Hummingbirds. And yeah, thank you again, sir, for calling in. And Lord bless you the same. We'll be back at the same time next week, and hopefully the discussion be on hell. Does it exist? Yeah, I know that a lot of people out there don't think it does, but we're gonna dig into it. So Pastor Lewis, thank you for calling in, and God bless you, sir.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
All right.
Yeah.
you,